Irish Illustrated Insider is sponsored by VisitSouthBend.com. Is it time to check a Notre Dame home game off your bucket list? Has it been too long since you've soaked in the game day atmosphere in person? Whether it's for the first time ever or in a while, start planning your trip to South Bend to watch the Fighting Irish with ideas and inspiration at VisitSouthBend.com.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley. It's Monday, October 23rd. Notre Dame coming off the bye week, and we started talking about the Pittsburgh Panthers, Notre Dame's opponent this weekend in Notre Dame Stadium. We had that discussion with Marcus Freeman at his Monday press conference. Tim, we didn't talk about a whole lot of groundbreaking news. We did talk a lot about injuries, guys coming back. We didn't get anything definitive about that, but we will talk about the wide receivers that need to come back and be up and running for Notre Dame to get a sweep here down the stretch of the remaining four games. Clemson, a loser over the weekend, and so now the value of that victory, if Notre Dame were to get on November 4th, would be reduced a bit, but that's still going to be a tough environment, Tim, for Notre Dame. But first, let's talk about the Pittsburgh Panthers. I had a chance to look at a bunch of film over the weekend. I know you took a look as well, Tim. Just your thoughts on Notre Dame's upcoming opponent this weekend.
It's one of those games where we talked about this a little bit in its analysis. The offense Pittsburgh is going to bring to the equation should not reach the end zone twice against Notre Dame's defense, if not blessed with short fields. I mean, it is a, what do you use, Stone Age, prehistoric? I said Stone Age, you said prehistoric. Their offense has Sebo Flemister. It has made the change at quarterback, of course, for Irish fans who do not know. You will not see Phil Dracovic out there. Tim, I don't know if you saw this, but there were analytics, Pat Narduzzi referenced that Dracovic was actually costing them points when he was on the field.
He said that?
Wesley was like loosely referenced in a thing, yes. Oh. But I still think they have a viable defense. You make a great point with, they have 22 sacks this year, which is you know, that's fine in seven games. But they used to make their wares defensively by pressuring the quarterback with their front four and playing that press man on the outside. People think of Pat Narduzzi and Michigan State's best defenses. It's not the same this year, and you started getting into it with your film review. It has to come from all levels now, and that does leave you vulnerable in one spot, and something that Notre Dame is going to have to take advantage of. They're going to have to be able to use their wide receivers to beat Pittsburgh in this game.
Yeah, they lost Kalijah Kancey, a first-round draft choice, defensive end for them last year. They also lost Baldonado and Alexander, a couple of free agent defensive ends at side in the NFL. I don't know if they made a roster, but I think anytime that you...
That's NFL worthy, though, and that's a thing.
Yeah, exactly. Anytime you're in a camp, I mean, that, you know, usually those guys, when you hear a guy was in a camp, usually those guys were difference makers from the school that they came from, and they just... They really don't have that. Deion Hayes and Nate Temple, and those are your starting defensive ends. They haven't gotten a, they have not received a lot of productivity from them, but they'll bring their linebacker. Shane Simon, former Notre Dame linebacker, is tied for the team lead in sacks with three. So they, you know, it's pretty spread around, and their corners and safeties will blitz, which gives you opportunities to hit some deep shots, which was also a topic of conversation with Marcus Freeman today. And he said, hey, they have to run when they want to run the football. And that's not easy against Pittsburgh all the time. 3.1 per carry once again. And deep shots, well, that hasn't been a staple of Notre Dame's offense, but they will have some opportunities this weekend.
And you have to hit them to loosen it up a little bit, Tim, because you can get away from Pittsburgh, because getting away is 17-3. Going to the half is getting away from Pittsburgh, because you can dictate the game at that point too. You get ahead 24-3, 20-3. That's not an offense that comes back, but Pittsburgh will welcome the slog. They will welcome the, you want to try to run the ball on us? We're more than happy to make you an inefficient rushing team and make it 3rd and 6. And Notre Dame has been so poor on third and fourth down, mostly third down, in the last four games at 17-60, right? Combined 3rd and 4th down. And what, 4 of those 17 are fourth down conversions. Now you think, well, what's the difference? I mean, you're giving up field position if you don't get it. That's the difference. So if you punt it away on third down, it's different. So I'm intrigued to watch this game. This is the one I pegged as a cheapo loss earlier in the year when you're trying to look for that upset pick. Now, I think the upset pick already happened. The sleepwalk already happened against a better team. Of course, ironically, this team of Pittsburgh beat the better team, Louisville, that I'm talking about pretty handily, but that's college football. You would think Notre Dame would be prepared for this one. I just don't. No matter what the point spread is of 19, if it starts at 19, goes to 17, I just don't see a cakewalk because both teams can play defense, and that makes it a second half game. It doesn't have to be a fourth quarter game.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tim. And I mean, let's state up front, Pittsburgh's not very good.
I'm not trying to laud them here.
They're not very good, and Sebo Flemister, I think, is running the football really nicely for them. I think he's a competent power five.
I like all the words you're using now, well, and also the press conference. You're like, he's good. He's pretty good. He's nice. Yeah. He's competent. It's all just.
Yeah. I don't think that he's better than that, but I do. I think that he's the best running back that Pittsburgh has. And I think Shane Simon is one of the two best linebackers that they have. And Phil Jurkovec is not in the lineup. Now, Christian Veyer, that's how it's pronounced. It looks like
Villieu or Valet, yeah, or anything like that. Yeah,
but it's Veyer. So yeah. We're thankful for that pronunciation. It's easy. And everybody has to get accustomed to it going into this weekend. But here's the thing. Frank Cignetti is their offensive coordinator. And if you have seen the last two Pittsburgh games, it has been very basic. They don't want to put them in a lot of negative situations. Not as basic, however, as Wake Forest with Santino Marucci as their starting quarterback, who threw a touchdown pass with 7 seconds to go to beat Pittsburgh. But they were really basic with Wake Forest. They're going to give Veyer a little bit more to work with. But this is still underneath throws. Mm-hmm. It's third and short, fourth and short. Generally speaking, they're running the football. The Pittsburgh Wake Forest game was not an enjoyable watch over the weekend. It was a must watch for me going into the weekend, but man, not very good.
Took some discipline for you though. I want readers to understand that Tim Priester normally watches the opponent in our 3 hours in the press box prior to the other game. Well, on bye week, you had a TV available to you. So this is a nice effort. Your adherence to the norm was good. It was impressive.
Yeah, it was fun. Popping back and forth. Saw Clemson, Clemson lose.
Clemson gave Notre Dame a break by losing that game though, because that game will not be at night. And if anything was going to be a problem, if you're going to heighten your problems going to Clemson, it would be a wild night atmosphere at Clemson if Notre Dame's coming in there.
Yeah. Right. Thanks for mentioning that, Tim. By the way, the Clemson game will kick off at either noon or 3:30 Eastern time. I don't know when we'll have that. Will that be finalized today at some point? I think maybe.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they need to wait too. Usually there's the exception for the night game call, but they don't have to wait on that at this point.
Right. Now, Pittsburgh's not very good, but you know, I think there are players that you need to, that Notre Dame needs to concern themselves with. I clearly think that their two corners, MJ Devonshire and then AJ Woods, I think are very good. Devonshire had his third pick six in the last year and a half. He had two last year. This was an 86 yarder against Louisville, and he's good. AJ Woods is always around the football. Like I said, they'll bring those guys on blitzes. Pittsburgh's just they're a pain in the butt team to play because you know they're going to be physical. They're like, you know, they reflect the head coach, Pat Narduzzi, who looks disheveled on the sideline, and his team generally plays disheveled. They had 13 penalties over the weekend. I mean, they are not a very disciplined football team. They've ranked in the hundreds in penalties. I said five, it may be the last 6 years, for at least 5 years, they've been in the bottom 10% of the country in penalties. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous because the bottom line for that is Pat Narduzzi's offense and defense have to play complementary football. And if you're that heavily penalized all the time, you're not USC that can make up for it. Like if you said Caleb Williams, USC's offensive line averages 30 yards in penalties a game and their receivers average 10 yards. All right, well, then they just throw for yards and it doesn't really matter that much. This you can't have Pittsburgh's offense behind the eight ball. It's got to be maddening for him. But as you pointed out, sometimes it's the aggressiveness on defense. That is part of it. They're not every penalty is a mental error. Some of it is how they play aggressively on defense.
Yeah, they don't mind getting interference penalties, and this goes back to Narduzzi at Michigan State. I mean, they don't mind getting interference penalties because the yardage is a lot less than if you give up a deep ball. So it makes perfect sense. They're very aggressive. They don't have any hesitation to be aggressive and to beat receivers up a little bit. And so they'll call that. Their offensive line is struggling. Their right tackle, number 70, is in for a really lousy day against Javonte Jean-Baptiste coming up. He really struggled against Wake Forest. And, you know, Wake is not – actually, Wake's defense, when we get to them in a couple of weeks, their defense has done some good things here in recent weeks and it's coming on a little bit. But that was a bad game to watch. And Veyer, if a guy's open and he has time, he'll find him, he'll see him, and he'll get him the football. But he has a ton of timing issues with his wide receivers, which is expected because he's new to the starting lineup.
Fortunately, Tim, it has been 7 years since the living, breathing quarterback would beat a Notre Dame defense, because that is not how this one operates.
No, that's not going to work. But again, you know, if they're open, he'll find them. He does have good vision. We'll throw sidearm a little bit. Well, he's given them a spark. There's no doubt. But remember when we were talking about the Duke Clemson game and I said, man, the statistics do not tell the story. Duke won by 21, but statistically it wasn't close. I watched the Louisville Pitt game and I didn't realize how one-sided it was. Louisville, 28 first downs, Pittsburgh 13. 3 for 13 on third down, Pittsburgh. They didn't play very well. They were outgained by 150 yards and they won by 17 points.
There's going to be some three and outs this week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're definitely well. Yeah. Louisville turned it over 3 times. Jack Plummer went back to being Jack Plummer against Pittsburgh, not against Notre Dame, against Pittsburgh. He went back to being Jack Plummer again, and Pittsburgh outscored him 24-0 in the second half. So you'll have that.
2 days of Pittsburgh, Monday and Thursday. So people are going to be overloaded with Pittsburgh, but we're going to have you prepared.
Yeah, we're a little ahead of schedule. Let's go ahead and jump back to the press conference today, because we did talk about injured players. I don't know that we got any clarity.
I think we did on Colsey. We got a little clarity on Colsey.
Marcus Freeman said he's behind schedule. He had the scope a couple weeks ago.
I think Colsey, if he's behind schedule with 4 games and 5 weeks to go, I think it's prudent for Notre Dame and for Colsey that he finishes with 4 games played, and then he can redshirt for Notre Dame or redshirt in any other way he wants.
Yeah. I'm not sure what his long-term future is.
I don't know either, but he played as a freshman. He played as a sophomore last year. He could use that year back for Notre Dame, or for Notre Dame next year, and then for a grad transfer at other times. You know, that's it. Hey, I mean, Deion Colsey, when he was healthy this year, he had a good game against Navy. It was against Navy. He's a better athlete than them, but he has had okay moments. That Notre Dame can't be beggars and beggars can't be choosers either. No. But I don't think an unhealthy Deion Colsey should be playing for Notre Dame right now, or not fully back Deion Colsey should play game 6. Yeah.
He had 3 targets, 3 catches against Navy, and we haven't seen him catch a pass a pass since. Now, as it relates to Jaden Thomas, Marcus Freeman said today that he was healthier for Louisville than he was for USC. He only had, what, about a dozen snaps, Tim? 14 snaps or
Something
that, so he needed this week off, and you know, Greathouse did too. But again, we don't have any real actual clarity that those guys are suddenly going to hit the ground running this Saturday.
It's probably hard to on Tuesday to ever give clarity on hamstring injury wide receivers or corners, because they have to make it through Wednesday's practice and stuff like that. And at this point, you would think that they probably had plenty of time off last week. Jaden Thomas, and I would assume Jaden Thomas and Jaden Greathouse had a lot of time off. But Tuesday and Wednesday are the key for them. Notre Dame needs one of them. Notre Dame really needs two of them for the stretch run. They need one of them every game to help out a little. If you go back and kind of look at, I was trying to do this for Monday Musings, and if you were to just do 5 or 6 best players the last 4 games on offense and 5 or 6 the first 4 games, you could put Jaden Thomas and Jaden Greathouse in the first 4 games, and they're completely absent from it in the next 4 games. And that's not just the opponent. That's the fact that they weren't healthy. Yeah. They do need something back there.
Well, they need Jaden Thomas. I mean, they need the most experienced guy that went into the season. I think Greathouse is ahead of schedule as a true freshman. But if you really want what you need at the wide receiver core, not only physically, but like leadership wise, they need Jaden Thomas back, and they need him right away. Tobias Merriweather, interesting. We weren't asked that. Nobody asked him about his hamstring issue that we've heard about, but Marcus Freeman flat out said that during the bye week, they're looking for ways to get the football to Tobias Merriweather.
I mean, they only have so many weapons. He's got to be one of them. I like what Chris Tyree has done for Notre Dame this year. Here's the best thing you can say about Chris Tyree, and it's a huge compliment. He's the only consistent guy this year. He came to play every single game. He has made a play in every single game, sometimes two. Now he's not a game breaking player all game long. He's a one big play guy, and it's probably hard to do anything more with him. But if everybody were consistent as Chris Tyree of the top four wide receivers, they would have one fewer loss, maybe two.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly why they need Thomas and Greathouse back. Tyree's not a volume receiver, but he is giving them big plays, as you said, and they've been significant, man. And it's all, you know, like,
oh no, I don't want to diminish him at all. It's just the word seems like it's a backhanded compliment. It's not. He's been the consistent guy.
But every game we say there's Tyree's play. And in some instances, it's been a little bit more than that, but they need those guys back, and they need them against Clemson. I don't care if Clemson is struggling. You're still going to have to go to Clemson and play some of your best football to come away from that game, because
they're not getting killed. They were close to Florida State. They had Miami. They were almost there with Duke. They're still a very viable upset threat, and it's going to be a short point spread. It's not going to be Notre Dame by four.
No, absolutely not. I agree with you exactly. And yeah, I think it's unfortunate that if Notre Dame goes to Clemson, wins a football game, it's going to be an achievement, but it won't be viewed that way. And if it's a loss, good Lord, we know the criticism that will ensue if that happens.
Yeah, I think actually I take it a different way, and I don't want to go off on a tangent here to end segment one. I think it'd be worse for Notre Dame if they're in the playoff hunt, the situation that's happening to Clemson. I don't think there's gonna be that much weight put into the Clemson game for the Major Six Bowl. I just don't believe that the drilling down of everyone's resume at number 11, 12, and 13 is as intense as it is. Well, I know it's not as intense as it is at 3, 4, 5, and 6. Yeah. And I feel like that if Notre Dame had one loss right now, people would have been really upset that Clemson lost. Notre Dame fans would be like, oh gosh, we needed that. I don't think you need it that much. I think you just need to run the table and have a couple teams lose.
You do. Regardless what their situation is, I don't know how good their quarterback play has been up to this point, certainly not to the level I think that they expected with Lincoln Riley's brother as offensive coordinator there at Clemson. It's just been, they're hard to watch. They're hard to watch.
I told you I had a Power Five coach not from Notre Dame tell me, well, he mentioned Notre Dame's receivers in the same breath as Clemson's, and that was not in a
good way,
complimentary manner.
No. Tim, anything else from Marcus Freeman today that we should hit? Traore was mentioned. I don't know if anything's definitive about how much he's going to play. He's played in two games, so he's got leeway with two.
Yes, it's three.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. That's right.
It's three games. Raerden has played in two. You and I have talked offline. If Eli Raerden can be targeted going forward, it's okay to keep playing him. He'll end up with seven games played. That's fine. If he's not, I would play Raerden four games, because you're already using Cooper Flanagan, who's played seven or eight games. Davis Sherwood has played every game. They can block like Eli Raerden right now. I know Davis Sherwood can block like Eli Raerden right now. If Raerden can help you in the passing game, but he has not been targeted yet. If he can help you in the passing game, fine. If not, I would hold him to four games, because he lost a year last year in the worst way possible at game five. That stinks.
Game five. And I think that they were just about ready to really start maybe getting them the football a little bit more. And that was really unfortunate. But Tim, you asked about Jadarian Price as well of Marcus Freeman.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I've asked about Jeremiah Love. We know that Jabron Payne has a role that they are very comfortable with. He is the third down back. I mean, he has more third down conversions than the rest of the running backs combined. Audric Estime has not had one since Central Michigan. I found that out over the weekend when I was going through the stats. That's really weird that Estime doesn't have a third down conversion since Central Michigan. Payne is their third down guy, and we know why. He gets lower than everybody else. He really does. He's good at it. There aren't a lot of carries to go around, so I feel bad sometimes asking Jared Parker and Marcus Freeman this, because we're like, why don't you play Love and Tre'Davious Price? And they have Audric Estime, who's, but healthy, is the guy. He does pretty well. I just think Tre'Davious Price needs that. I'm not saying 10 carries, 5 carries a game like Jeremiah Love gets. You can vary your offense a little, because now we should not view him as a guy they have to bring along with kid gloves from his injury after that return. It doesn't make any sense. 5 carries a game and 1 kickoff return a game. That he's got to be fine for that in November.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And we always knew that playing 5 running backs, when you're beating up on people, it's easy. But when you start to get into the meat of your schedule.
He actually admitted it. Marcus Freeman kind of forecast it. He said, we're not going to play 5 as the whole season goes along. It was a good story early on because you had those games where you could. I bet they were feeling out the running backs. Jabron Payne probably won that role in August and cemented it in September. He kept his role. Ford's a special teams guy more than anything else. I just thought you'd see more Price. And he's shown he can do it with the kickoff return. So I know his explosiveness is there.
You've heard us talk about home field apparel since the start of the season. There are a lot of collegiate apparel brands out there, but we wanted to partner with Home Field because their designs are the best out there. Some of Irish Illustrated's favorites are the Sam Hartman Victory March Tee, the Script Tee, and the Retro Long Sleeve. Be sure to go to homefieldapparel.com, filter by Notre Dame, and see what we're talking about. There's also currently an exclusive football bundle, which includes a baseball tee, sweats, a hoodie, and more. It's the perfect gift for a fellow Irish fan, or a perfect gift to treat yourself for being a loyal Notre Dame fan. And our listeners get an exclusive deal using code Irish Illustrated. Irish Illustrated gets you 15% off your first order. We know you're all wearing Notre Dame gear, so if you're in need of a refresh, we really think you should check out Home Field Apparel. Their designs are super unique, and a lot of thought goes into each concept. There's really nothing else on the market like what Home Field is doing. You can find them at homefieldapparel.com. And again, use your code Irish Illustrated for 15% off your first order. Segment 2, coming up, Burning Up the Boards.
If you're coming to a game this season, you have to check out Game Day Your Way, the official tailgate service provider of Notre Dame. Game Day Your Way offers everything you need, including tailgate gear, catering, and even beverage delivery right to your spot. And their Irish Express transportation from Chicago allows you to tailgate while you travel to their all-inclusive party zone in South Bend. Let Game Day deal with all the hassle so you can focus on the fun. For tailgates, tickets, transportation, and more, visit GameDayYourWay.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Some things are just made for each other, like tailgates and touchdowns. We're adding one more pair to the list, Aer Lingus and college football. Join us in Dublin this August for the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Too soon? Plan your winter or spring break now with non-stop flights from cities including Chicago, Boston, Los Angeles and New York. Fly in comfort to Dublin, our European hub. Go coast to coast and discover the sights of Ireland, or explore any of the 50 plus European cities we connect to, including Amsterdam, London, Paris and Rome. Visit airlingus.com to book today.
Welcome back to segment 2, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question is from Anon 472623. Or if you were to have a weird football mind, that would be what, Ned Bolkar, Daryl Pollard, and maybe Michael Jordan, Tim Priestra, if you're looking at those numbers. Everyone agrees Notre Dame should have gotten a quarterback in the portal last year. They brought in Sam Hartman this year, and it appears most believe Notre Dame needs to hit the portal for a quarterback next year, too. When does this quote-unquote hamster wheel stop and Notre Dame goes with a Notre Dame recruited quarterback? Will Notre Dame ever be in a position where QB already on the roster will have enough experience on the job?
Experience, I don't know.
Is also in quotes for a reason, because
yes,
they don't play.
It is. And I don't, and that's why I was going to comment on, Tim, that I don't know that experience will be met after the 2024 season, but I think after the 2024 season, And again, we don't know about the quarterback roster at that point, but all things being equal, I would think at 2024, that's when they're going to say, okay, we're going to go with one of our developed young quarterbacks and let him play, let him be the starter.
Post 2024, you're saying, after next year?
Yes.
We're fairly certain they're going to get a quarterback. Well, they're going to try to get a quarterback in the portal. We're fairly certain they'll get one. When you have CJ Carr in the system for a year, Kenny Minchie in the system for 2 years, and potentially Steve Angeli, one of those guys isn't going to be on the roster if they get a portal QB, obviously, but that's how the world works. You should be able to figure out then if those are your quote unquote franchise quarterbacks, since we're using air quotes, and then Deuce Knight comes in. Look, if Deuce Knight comes in and CJ Carr isn't starting over Kenny Minchie, then which one of those three is it? It's the hamster wheel. Is quarterbacks have always transferred. It has only a little bit to do with the current landscape. They always will transfer if they don't play.
Well, it's getting hard to not look for a transfer quarterback because you want to be experienced at the position. And if you're a place like Notre Dame, you can probably keep going out and landing at least a fairly experienced quarterback. Let's go ahead and throw Joe Ty's question here, Tim. In the last podcast, you mentioned that you believe the staff will look at the portal for a quarterback. Any names on who that quarterback would be?
I know Pratt and Leonard are going to keep popping up, but it's worth noting, I don't think any of us said Sam Hartman in October of 2022. We did in December, but I don't think we did in October. I'd love to go back and look when somebody asked us about, can Hartman translate to ND with the slow mesh offense? And our response was, well, he wouldn't run the slow mesh offense at ND, so we think he can. I just don't think he was anywhere near the radar, but there is a thin needle you have to, or needle to thread. Yeah, that's what you're supposed to say. A needle to thread. There I go. Because he's got to be a guy that can't go pro that easily, but could easily come in and win the job at Notre Dame and go win at Kyle Field, which is an issue. You have to go to A&M to start the season August 31st.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked a lot about Michael Pratt last year. And
yes, he was talked about in October last year.
Yes, he was. And we knew that he was on Notre Dame's radar. Now, does he go pro after this year? He stuck around. He led Tulane on the game-winning drive over the weekend, scored on a 20-some-yard run for the game-winning score. I like his game. I like the way the ball comes off his hand. He's agile. He's a runner. And he has a ton of experience. I realize he hasn't played against some of the best competition. And when he played against USC in a bowl game last year, that the defense had just cashed it in, and he was dicing them. He was slicing him up. Yeah. So he's a good quarterback. Riley Leonard, it seems like a lot of people aren't sold on Riley Leonard, the thrower. And I realize that his completion percentage isn't really high, but man, when I watch him, I don't see a guy that's lacking a whole lot in the passing game.
I think he's lacking NFL passing ability, but that's not what the deal is.
No, so. Probably true. And I think I was looking at the questions and, or somebody made a comment on our board about, you know, I don't think Pratt's as good as Hartman. Well, you may not get a guy as good as Hartman. That can't always be the standard that you're going to get, you know, the ACC all-time leader in touchdown passes or whatever stats he's in front of. But I mean, I like Michael Pratt. Again, he was a name that was on the list last year. I presume that he would be on the list now again. Would Notre Dame be looking at, you know, Notre Dame talks about when it comes to transfers, a guy that's been in college for a year or a guy that's a grad transfer. Those are the easiest to bring into Notre Dame.
Yeah.
I don't know who some of those younger quarterbacks would be.
And I'm not down. That feels different to me than the Sam Hartman, Michael Pratt, Jack Cohn thing. I like that to win you games and hopefully while you'll develop your quarterbacks, but you're not developing all four of these quarterbacks. When I say Angeli, Minchie, Carr, and Deuce Knight, happen in the 90s. It's not going to happen now.
And you're putting your quarterbacks in that's a tough situation now because, you know, a name that comes to mind for me is Chris Vezina at Clemson, because is Klubnik going to be the starter for another 2 years?
Probably.
You know, so who knows what's, and I don't have any intel on that, but when you think of young quarterbacks that had an interest in Notre Dame, I'm totally speculating on this.
Yeah, okay? It's harder to talk. My only point of contention there is harder to at all calm down the CJ Carr, Kenny Minchie, Steve Angeli triumvirate with bringing in Chris Vezina than it is bringing in a one-year guy.
I agree. I realize the reaction to that when people hear the name, but I was just thinking, okay, what young quarterbacks, and he was the first one that came to mind. There's somebody else, and I can't remember who it is right now, but they're looking. And as we said in the podcast last week on Thursday, we expect Notre Dame to go out and try to find and land a transfer quarterback to take over in 2024. And then from there, then you rely on the recruiting because you've done pretty well.
It's picked up. That's why you're relying on recruiting.
It really has.
Next question, Martin Evenflow. How much production can realistically be expected from Jaden Thomas, Tobias Merriweather, and Deion Colsey for the remainder of the season?
Well, I mean, we talked about this in segment one. From Jaden Thomas, a lot.
Yep.
I mean, a lot. I think, you know, if he's healthy for the last four regular season games, there should be 20 targets there.
Yeah. Jaden Thomas, first four games, 9 gains of at least 10 yards in 4 games, and 10 first downs earned. Jaden Greathouse, 5 in the first 3 games. He didn't have one, curiously, against Central Michigan. He had a couple more against Ohio State. So 7 in the first 5 games in terms of large gains, and 8 first downs. I mean, those are guys that can make plays. Now, Tobias Merriweather, I think if in 4 games, if you get 2 big plays, that's great. And if you get 1 first down a game, that's realistic.
Yeah. Jaden Thomas, I know it was against Navy and Tennessee State, but in the first 2 games, he was targeted 8 times and had 8 catches.
Yeah, someone's got to make plays against those teams too. You throw to the guys and they make plays. He's a quality player when he's healthy.
Then he was 0 for 4 against NC State. Then he had 4 catches on 6 targets against Central Michigan. And that's when the hamstring issue really came into play, and he hasn't been able to do anything of real note since then. But I expect Jaden Thomas to be targeted 20 times in the last 4 games of the regular season. Tobias Merriweather, based upon what Marcus Freeman said today, they still want to try to get him the football. And then based upon what he said about Colsey today, he may be shut down.
Yeah, I don't see Colsey doing a lot in the regular season.
With the extra bye week, then he would be more ready for Wake Forest. And
that's true. Stanford. Yeah, that's a good point. He's got 3 weeks before Wake Forest. He's also played 4 games. I think it's good for Deion Colsey's Notre Dame career and graduate career to play 4 games this year. We have to find out if he can play that 5th bowl game. I feel so weird that I can't figure it out if that was a 1-year rule or not. That's a mission. We're going to find out if the 5th game count, the bowl game counts. If the bowl game no longer counts against your eligibility, like last year when it didn't. I don't think it should, because it's combating the transfer portal. That's the whole point. Is your players not play because they're transferring out of your program. So your reserve players should be allowed to play in the bowl game. So I think it is a new rule that has to stick. If it hasn't been for 1 year, it should be extended. Because you're always going to lose starters, which is just weird to lose a starter because it's December 1st.
No, I hear you. And somebody asked a question about, why don't some of these players skip into the regular season games that are blowouts? And that will start happening more and more now as well. Question from Jay Padel 10. Is Tobias Merriweather having a sophomore slump like Lorenzo Styles last year? Or is this actually what progress looks like compared to last year? In other words, has he shown more capability previously but regressed this year? Or has he simply not been good all along and he's only making incremental improvement thus far? That's asking that they want a very specific breakdown of how he has progressed in 2 seasons.
It's hard to answer this from last year because we were in the group of that Tobias Merriweather was not going to help Notre Dame that much had he played more. Now, I think he might have helped a little bit. I think concussion set him back. It was a bad one in November. I just take Lorenzo Styles out of it because Lorenzo Styles, I think, had mentally checked out a little bit of playing for Notre Dame during times last year. I don't think Tobias Merriweather is doing that. I think he's trying to put it together. I think it's just incremental improvement, and he's not as good as I thought he was entering the season, because I thought he would be a guy that would catch 30 balls like Lorenzo Styles, only probably averaging 15 yards a catch to make a major difference in the offense, and that's not there. Now, we did hear from other people in August that that notion was inaccurate.
Yeah.
That I was wrong. So,
yeah, I mean, I think maybe when Tobias Merriweather impressed Notre Dame the most was in like the summer of.
Oh, yeah. The priest. We thought he would. When everybody was wondering why he wasn't playing in September, because he looked good of 22. You're right. Of his freshman year. But that's when you forgive a lot of stuff, too, when you're a coach.
No. Oh, no. So, yeah. Summer ball. Yes. It's just.
Even August camp, you forgive some. You're like, oh, this guy's going to be a player because he's so athletic. And now remember, he did not have a great camp when we were there this year. Period. End of story. We did not see every practice, but when we watched, he did not have a great camp.
No, dropped some back shoulder passes and didn't look very good. First of all, you can't have a sophomore slump if you weren't good as a freshman.
Right. Lorenzo Styles was good as
a freshman. Lorenzo Styles was good as a freshman. Tobias Merriweather was good for a 41-yard touchdown against Stanford. And that was, you know, that was in the midst of the concussion period of time for him as well. And so, like, he just hasn't, I mean, I don't, you know, whatever phrasing you want to put on it, he hasn't been as good as we thought he was going to be. I think the Notre Dame coaching staff still sees just the sheer athletic ability and potential there.
Well, look at the guy. I mean,
when he had the long touchdown against Central Michigan, you see that guy in his full stride? It's absolutely beautiful. But, you know, I talk about football toughness, and having football toughness is not an easy thing. Not everybody.
Yeah. Not he needs confidence. He needs some confidence. Something has to.
Confidence is not good. I can't say body language. That's right. Okay.
I bet your Freeman's body language is a lot better against USC than it was against Louisville. All the body language was great in that game as opposed to the other game.
Yeah. Question from Irish from A2. Which Notre Dame opponent results are you most surprised by this year?
I guess Clemson. I figured they'd have a loss at this point, but not three. So technically Clemson, probably the way they just didn't improve on offense though either. You know, that was one major thing for me. So Clemson would be the biggest surprise. I mean, Louisville was always set to be undefeated before they got Notre Dame. I did not think they would beat Notre Dame. That was set up for the whole year. Yeah. USC was set up to be undefeated for Notre Dame too the whole time. These were like always going to happen. Duke is tough because Notre Dame beat them on the last play of the game and injured their quarterback. So it directly affected their Florida State game. Duke has done a great job. I did not think Duke would beat Clemson. So there's some combination of Duke and Clemson here.
Yeah, I thought Brennan Armstrong would make NC State's offense a little bit more viable. But that certainly hasn't happened. He's regressed. I mean, I would agree with Clemson because I thought they were going to have a bounce back year after back-to-back three losses.
Not be undefeated right now, but one loss probably was they're a type of team that would lose a game in this.
You know, their offensive line, it just never seems to get good.
Even their 18 team was nowhere near the rest of it. I mean, they're fine, but there was nowhere near the rest of the talent on that team.
I mean, Shipley's a better running back than what we've seen, but when you're not running behind a quality offensive line, that's what happens. Their receiving core is not, I thought it would be better. I like Bull Collins, but I don't know how huge his numbers are. And then, I mean, it's just them. Stanford, we knew would struggle. Wake Forest, you know, they lost Sam Hartman. They made a transition.
Yeah. I almost had no thoughts on them. Wake Forest coming into the year because they lost Sam Hartman. They were
lost. You know, Pittsburgh won 9 games. Pittsburgh won 20 games in the last 2 years. But
yeah.
Their losses were really substantial, especially on the defensive side of the football. They were without three offensive linemen in the loss to was that the Louisville loss or no? I think it was Virginia Tech. Yeah, Virginia Tech. They got blown out by Virginia Tech, and I didn't expect them to be this bad.
No, I didn't expect them to be good, but not this bad.
I think we all thought Jurkovic would perform a little bit better.
Although I did have the backup quarterback coming in against Notre Dame, so I suppose I had them going somewhere. But down the line.
You didn't know who it was, did you?
No, I had no idea who it would be. I just figured it wouldn't be Phil Jurkovic. Analytics told me. The way he plays, too, puts in a little bit of jeopardy in the way his body, too.
You were thinking injury as opposed
I was thinking ineffectiveness, injury, like he can't go. Same as Boston College. Then he could write a memoir about why he doesn't like Notre Dame before the Pittsburgh game, too, or something like that.
Yeah.
Next from Scott 24105, with Luke Talich, a full-time special teams player, do you see him on scholarship next season? And what do you see as his floor as a player? Is he a free safety or strong safety? And Talich, I believe Tim has played 7 games, so he is lettered.
Yeah, I think we've been impressed with everything we've seen from him, both on special teams and what we saw in August. We fully expect him to be placed on scholarship next year in 2024. I think he's earned that. I see him more as a free safety than a strong safety, but I don't know exactly what their plans are with him. I seem to struggle with the floor ceiling part. I mean, floor is full time.
He's a reserve player for his floor. Yeah, I mean, full-time, he's a reserve scholarship player.
And a full time special teams player, obviously. Yeah. But I think he will emerge. How soon? I don't know. There's going to be a need next year, especially if Xavier Watts.
I hope we know the starting safeties next year and Luke Talich is a reserve going into his second year.
Yeah, but he has great length, great maneuverability. He's a player. I think there's an excellent chance that he becomes a starter at Notre Dame. I don't know exactly when.
I don't think it'll be next year, though. I think Notre Dame will have. I mean, Adon Schuler is a good player, too, that will be healthy going to next year. You figure Antonio Carter II,
yes,
is in the rotation. If Ramon Henderson wants to stay, he definitely has a spot for his fifth year. Does he have a? Why am I blanking? Does he have a COVID year? Did he come in 2020? Yeah, he did come in 2020, along with Caleb Offord and Clarence Lewis, Ramon Henderson. So yeah, he has 2 years left.
Yeah,
Mike could be the next DJ Brown.
Yeah, needs to be more productive. He's not as productive as DJ Brown. If he could be as productive as
that's true. DJ Brown in his senior year, his real senior year, had 3 picks.
Yeah.
Next from Kay Beasley, saw some recent draft rankings, including Mitchell Evans. Do you think he would consider leaving? What other players are maybe thinking about an NFL evaluation?
Can we talk about this?
We did. Evans, I asked this question too many weeks ago for it to matter anymore. The feedback I got would he would not be considered leaving, but then he had 2 more really good games. So that must have been post-Duke. Yeah, because breakout was Ohio State, then Duke, and now he just keeps playing well. I don't think Mitchell Evans would necessarily be ready to go. I think he could develop more at Notre Dame for 1 more year, whereas Audric Estime should 100% start getting paid for getting hit.
Absolutely. Guys that will ask for an evaluation, and again, we think that the limit is 5.
Used to be. I don't know if it's changed, but it definitely used to be.
Yep. Probably Xavier Watts on the heels of 2 weeks ago, the performance. Riley Mills on a basis for his progress in the last month. Chris Tyree, I'm guessing. Maris Leofau would probably be interested in being evaluated by the NFL.
Estime, too. I mean, if he wants it, he's got to give it to him. He's your top. He's your top prize. He's not your top prospect, but he's a guy that deserves it. If he wants one, he's earned it, the right to have one. That's tough. If there's only 5, because there's some, especially with
Well, did we mention Blake Fisher yet? I don't know. Blake Fisher's not ready for the NFL, but he would probably ask for an NFL evaluation.
Cam Hart wouldn't bother asking in his 6th, as a 5th year guy, not coming back for a 6th. Howard Cross could ask. I just think he'll go pro.
Yeah, he should just, he should go pro. In the best interest of Howard Cross, he should just go. Right.
Totally agree.
I mean, what's the NFL going to tell him that he doesn't already know about his game?
Yeah, I think he'll go pro. I just, if he asks for one, you kind of got to grant it too. It's tough if there's only 5, but we're going by 5 because Brian Kelly said it once. And then Ian Book echoed it. And that made me think that Kelly wasn't just making stuff up. Every once in a while, just make stuff up. But I don't think if Ian Book, if our readers or listeners don't know this, after Ian Book's first year in the playoffs, I didn't even ask him about the NFL. And he somehow brought it up at the playoff open press conference. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
This just come out of here, but you've played 9 games. But he wanted to be evaluated, and he could not be because they already had 5 names.
Right.
And I also thought that might have been smart by Brian Kelly saying, like, oh, we can't evaluate you. Sorry, you got to come back.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you understand why they put a limit, because there would be a dozen guys from every
right. Jeez.
Team would run out of people to evaluate them. So there has to be a limit. We think it's 5. Question from Indy Fan 08. There are reports out there saying that Notre Dame men's hoops beat Xavier Sunday in a secret scrimmage. Are you guys ready to flip last week's predictions from 5 conference wins to Final Four?
5 plus conference wins. I maintain a couple things. If you play defense really hard and try really hard, as Micah Shrewsbury absolutely promised me, or actually promised everybody at the last press conference, you can win a few games. And number 2, the ACC is not good, and we're not used to that yet. And if Georgia Tech could win 6 games last year with that junk, Notre Dame can win 5 or 6 games this year. Sheer effort, Tim. Effort, defense, and hard cutting. I'm sold.
Well, we probably will see that. I don't know how well it will be executed.
In terms of execution is the key. Yes,
it is, regardless of the sport. So they did have this scrimmage. Secret. It's behind closed doors. It's intended for that. It isn't something that is supposed to be publicized. We hear that Marcus Burton played pretty well.
Well, if they won, somebody had to do well.
they apparently won. But again, you need to see that Xavier's big men were out and sidelined, which will be a real albatross for Notre Dame this year when they go up against some teams with size. So, I don't want to read too much into it. I know you're just joking, Andy Fan 08, when you say Final Four bound. I do want to say something, that I was being really flippant last week and just said that Notre Dame basketball, I used the word stink. That's totally unfair for me to say. I haven't even seen them practice.
Right. They stunk last year. That's fair to say.
Yeah, they stunk last year, and that's really unfair for me to just throw that out there without having had a chance to evaluate them. Now, I don't think they're going to be very good, and I don't think they're going to win very many games just because they don't have enough personnel. But the things that you said, Tim, about effort and defense and playing more bodies. Did you say playing more bodies?
But that's true, too.
I think that will happen as well. You just hope that they're semi-competitive so that
they have a difficult start, and I'm not saying I have evaluated South Carolina and Auburn and Georgetown and Marquette, but I just named those teams in the non-conference, and normally it's Central Michigan you're worrying about that, is the team that could maybe come in 7th in the MAC, and you worry about them. These are Power 5 teams they're going to have to be able to beat, and it's just going to take so long to gel. I noticed Coach Shrewsbury didn't really answer my question when he said it was a good question. When I read it back, I asked him about how he can find his rotation in November to get him in through December, into conference season. But I think he doesn't know his rotation yet. That's great. It's going to change. It will be fun to watch a team that they're not going to roll with 6 guys. They can't. They have to play a different way. They have to play. He won't end up playing all 10 all year. No one probably does that. But if he has rotating guys where, someone's not playing well and he's not in the lineup anymore, that would be refreshing for Notre Dame fans after the last few years.
You'd like to at least see 8 if that's feasible.
Feasible. We are brainwashed, Tim. It is feasible. Teams do it.
Yes. No, I know, but it'd be nice to have 13 scholarship players. You only have 10.
It's true, too. Maybe he will play 10. That's all they could throw out there.
Like, if 8 play all the time, so 80% is of the group are producing, that's a little high.
Yeah. Well, they need it.
No, they need it. I just, they need to get to the point where it's regularly 12 or 13 scholarship players, so you can simulate what you need in practice and get better. We have a question from Beast Texan. What's the more painful loss now, Ohio State or Louisville, who lost to a 1-4 Pittsburgh team?
I don't know how to rate this, because I feel like if Notre Dame beat Ohio State, they would somehow diminish Ohio State once they lose to Michigan or something along those lines. The Louisville loss kind of waylaid the season, so I think that's the more painful loss. If they would have beaten Duke, Louisville, and USC, Notre Dame would be ranked 8-7.
Well, you factor in
Ohio State is your only loss when you had 9 or 10. I had 9 guys on the field. You had 10 guys on the field. and you lost by one at the end on the last play, or lost by three, whatever, on the last play, that's a top seven Notre Dame team right now.
No, you're right. I would call, I think the Ohio State loss is more painful because
it hurts so much.
You should have won. Yes. And you shouldn't have won against Louisville. That's my
great
perspective
point.
On it. You didn't deserve to win Louisville.
You did deserve to beat Ohio State. You're right.
You deserve to beat Ohio State until the last 3 minutes.
You'd be ranked lower, though, your way, but you're correct.
Would they?
I think so. The Louisville loss was just so gross. Though they didn't fall as much as I thought they would when that happened. They fell from, what, 10 to 21? And they're back up to 14?
That's 21, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Ohio State, I know I took the Ohio State loss harder than I did.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, Louisville just looked like they didn't belong in the conversation anymore. Where Ohio State, they were great.
As one Power Five coach said, assistant coach said to me, you had a chance to beat the worst Ohio State team in the last 20 years, and you didn't do it. I don't know if that's an exact, of course, that's a wild
exaggeration, but it is funny.
but that's kind of how I looked at that, you know, you. Every Notre Dame fan that walked out of that stadium felt like you should have won that football game.
Yes. Whereas, you're correct. You have the right answer. I was wrong.
You're looking at it from a different perspective. Yeah. I get it.
Similar here as Statman. After watching Ohio State shut down Penn State, oh, gosh, by the way, that offended my delicate sensibilities. He did not say that I did. Should we feel better about Notre Dame's offensive performance against the Buckeyes? After watching Utah against USC, should we feel worse about Notre Dame's offensive performance against the Trojans? I hadn't read that question yet, and that was well-worded, Statman. That's funny.
Yeah, Statman's always on top of things. I don't know how to answer that question. It's Penn State was awful. Mike Yurcich, do you know who that is?
You told me today at the press conference. Yeah,
that's the offensive coordinator for Penn State. I bet you that
message board, what's it called, the Nittany Lion Lair or something? I bet you they fired a lot of people that day.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And, you know, when there's no rooting interest or no, you know, you look at it and it's like, my goodness. And, you know, I texted you about what loose emoji. I can hear loose emoji saying, we could, as far as Drew Eller, we could have had him. That was always a phrase that we used. You know, when you recruit a kid and you lost, yeah. And you didn't recruit, we could have had him. That was always the comment that he would make. And a lot of people were saying that about Drew Eller prior to Saturday.
It was bad to watch that offense, that whole thing. It's like there was, I put it in my musings. It's like there was a 30-mile-an-hour headwind at their face the entire time. Oh, and it was raining.
Kyle McCord wasn't exactly stellar through that whole game either.
No, it was not a great.
Yeah, look, two great defenses, and we knew it was going to be that kind of low scoring game.
I just didn't like Penn State's approach, but now we're getting into what everybody tells us about Notre Dame's approach. So I think
the attitude when you're Penn State was as long as we're within a score, we don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
To make it a two-score deficit, you know.
I think the attitude was also don't lose, and that's hard to watch when you don't care about the game. You just want to see something more fun.
That's how Notre Dame played against Ohio State last year.
Good point.
Irish Gambler didn't really have much choice.
No, they did not last year, as we know very well now. Irish Gambler, I believe 10 of the last 13 Notre Dame-Pittsburgh games have had a final score within one possession. What, with Notre Dame favored by 17.5, will Narduzzi try to keep Notre Dame one-dimensional and make Sam Hartman beat them through the air?
Yes.
Yes. We'll talk about more of that Irish Gambler on Thursday, because the answer is yes.
I think we were prepared to answer yes to that before we talked to Marcus Freeman today. And I think that he's saying that they have to run. They have to try to run. You can't just throw it all over the yard. And yet he also indicated that they're going to have to go deep a little bit too. But yeah, I think, you know, Marcus Freeman keeps saying that you got to run. You got to be able to run when you want to run. And I think, frankly, I think that they can. I think they can run against them. Wake Forest did. Wake Forest had 172 yards rushing and was clipping off 6 and 7 on a regular basis this past weekend.
You're going to regret those words on Saturday instant analysis postgame, Tim Priester, but that's okay. Yep.
What I saw is what I saw.
But I thought it was interesting where Freeman said we're seeing guys talking about self-scout. We're going to see extra guys in the box. People are going to challenge us to make plays downfield. So they have to.
17 and a half. O'Malley, you are all over this.
Hell, I'm just going on the under. I'm just doing the under. I mean, they could win 24-6, but that's it. They're not. That's the problem. I mean, they could win 24-6, but 17 and a half is crazy. I'm going under.
Hey, Pittsburgh is going to have a real difficult time scoring against Notre Dame.
24-6 doesn't sound like you covered, but you sure did.
That's a workable score. The 45, what is it? 45 and a half.
45 and a half.
Yeah. I wouldn't go that far under, but were you surprised to see 17 and a half?
I would have thought 14 and a half, I guess, but they have been bad this year, Pittsburgh.
No, they have. And they're 0-3 on the road. They've lost by 17, and their average margin of loss is double figures. So that would only make sense. And this is not I wouldn't call it a typical Pitt defense. We've already talked about that, about the pass rush from the D line. I really like the Shields, the kid that got that was concussed Saturday against Wake Forest. I think he's a really good linebacker, and their two corners are really, really good. AJ Woods is all over the field, and Devin Shire gets beat a little bit more, but I mean he's pressing at the line of scrimmage. They dare you. I just thought 17 and a half, considering Notre Dame's offense, was a little high, but I think that reflects just how poor Pittsburgh's offense is probably going to play against Notre Dame's defense.
Yes, that's a bad matchup. That is by far the worst matchup in the game. And it's a big one because they have the ball half the time. So that's a terrible matchup.
Last question for this October 23rd, Monday, from ND615. What was your favorite game that you were able to watch over the bye week? What team besides Notre Dame do you think would most enjoy covering this year based upon their style, personnel, and schedule?
I have three. The Bears versus the Patriots on Sunday at 1 p.m. It was a very difficult victory. We played down to our competition. However, pulled it out to finish undefeated. That's number three. Number two was the Raiders against the Broncos in the semifinals. And that was a deflected two-point conversion attempt to save the game. I have to give credit to the Broncos, who we beat by about 28 points in the regular season, for coming back and playing that hard and going for two in the win, Tim Priester, with like no time left. I was like, oh boy. That was the semifinal. The pass was deflected by a Freeman, I should point out. And also the championship game of the Raiders versus the Giants. And I did not know the Giants were going to bring Harrison Smith to play with them, but he was a problem for us. 26-20 victory, interception in the end zone. And that would be the team I would play. That's the team I would take, the Raiders. Do people know what I'm talking about now? Probably not. But that was my son's flag football teams. And we had a lot of close games this weekend, Tim Priester.
Yeah, you said you covered the spread in the second game. Is that correct?
Yeah, because I'm not sure we were favored, even though we were undefeated. We were an undefeated that team, but that if I think the analytics favored the Giants going in, their offense was something else.
Okay, well, I think the question might have involved the college games that were played.
Oh, I did not like the college games I watched. That's why I went with the pro games I watched.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, I was so looking forward to the Ohio State Penn State game, and I watched it all. And it was ugly. And I was very much looking forward to Pittsburgh Wake Forest because Pittsburgh is the next opponent and Wake Forest is down the road. That wasn't very good football. By nighttime, I didn't get a huge chance to see USC Utah, but that went just about the way Utah expects it to go these days.
Yeah. Wow. Do you know they had a Who's Your Daddy chant to Caleb Williams?
Really?
Yeah, it's on stand. They got him three times. I mean, it's really funny.
But the team that I think would, I don't know a lot about them because I haven't seen them a lot, other than I know that they're really good and really well coached and probably have the Heisman Trophy winner right now at quarterback. I think covering Washington would be a whole lot of fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. I wish I had watched and tuned in more to the North Carolina game, because that was high drama. Losing to Human Nature was very high drama right there.
I did. I saw a good portion of that. And I mean, you could just, I felt watching it at North Carolina, they're not going to come up with a play to win. They're just not going to do it, because it just felt that way the whole
game. It did feel that way. It was strange.
So I wasn't expecting, I know it's Drake May and I love, you know, Drake May, that certainly hurt his Heisman candidacy. Virginia's improved over last year, but see, this is why
they just played well, man. Sometimes you play
well.
Don't
be surprised when these things happen in college football. The game is, it sounds too simplistic to just say, well, that's college football, but it's football in general.
It always has been football. It always has been college football. Yes, they just played down.
It has. You know,
49ers are a lot better than the Browns. You could see that one coming after they killed the Cowboys. You know, it's
when I was a kid, there were fewer halves than there are now. I mean, talent wasn't spread around the way it is now. A great player can end up anywhere now. A group of players can end up at any one Power Five conference team. So, you know, we just shouldn't be surprised. There were a lot of games we were looking forward to Saturday that didn't live up to it.
Well, the Ohio State really took a lot of starch out of the day for me. That was my block too, to not have to do anything. And I was just sitting there mad at the football gods. Like, what is this? I mean, this is no wonder people make fun of Big Ten football sometimes. I was like, this is just terrible.
Now I get it. I'm going to choose Washington would be a team that I would like. Iowa would not be a team that I would. Can you imagine covering Iowa every week? No.
The over under was 30, Tim.
Oh my God.
or 30 and a half, probably. But that's awesome. And it was way under.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be a heavy Pittsburgh Panther week. We got to jump on it today. I wrote for those that are subscribers, I wrote a piece today. Having watched the Panthers over the weekend, just giving you an idea of what it would take for Notre Dame to avoid an upset. I don't expect an upset. I don't think you do either, Tim.
I don't, no.
But I think this might be one of those. It could be an ugly game that would have fit in really well for this past weekend. Yes. On October
23rd. I expect Irish Illustrated Overtime to have some angst-ridden fans over how
it I would imagine so. Well, we'll be there for that game. It looks like night games are done for the season.
Maybe Stanford for the people here on the East Coast, but that would be a 5 o'clock for us probably on the West Coast.
Yeah. So we catch a break after four straight. Until next time, which will be Thursday on October 26th, we expect Pete Sampson to join us then. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley, and this has been Irish Illustrated Insider.